Hello there once again, and welcome to the Illinois Radio Reader. My name is Cedric Richardson, and in this half hour, I'll be bringing you the Vermilion County News with a concentration on Danville and surrounding communities. In our first article, the Lions Club helps the community. At 100 years old, the Lions Club International still has a robust roar. And at almost 60 years old, the local chapter has a healthy voice as well. We feel like we're doing something for others. It keeps us motivated, said Fred Falstich, a Danville Lions Club member since 1962. We want to make life a little better for others. Falstich and other members are using the parent club's centennial to remind the community that the local club remains active and helps people in many ways. In fact, its biggest fundraiser, the annual Chili Day, is coming up on February 27th. Members will serve 16 to 18 pots of chili, with each pot holding 10 to 12 gallons, to about 1,000 people. Members also will bring in a variety of desserts, including former Mayor Bob Jones' famous bread pudding. In the past, the Chili Day has brought in between $10,000 and $11,000. Funds raised are used to help numerous local organizations, as well as to fund the Lions Club local programs. People may bring used eyeglasses and hearing aids to the event. The Lions Club works to help the blind and the visually and hearing impaired. The local club offers child and adult vision and hearing programs that help qualifying youth and adults with eye exams, obtaining glasses and vision and hearing assistance. The club works closely with Danville District 118, which makes referrals of children who need eye care. Used eyeglasses and hearing aids are restored to help others in need. The club also has diabetes awareness screening programs, as diabetes is one of the leading causes of blindness. In addition to Chili Day, which started in the 1970s, the club raises money by selling candy in the fall. In the past, the club has sold ears of sweet corn, but that was too labor-intensive. During its history, the club has sold brooms, zip code books, records, fruitcakes, skillets and coloring books, and has had rummage sales, car washes, chicken wing eating contests, and even sponsored an old-time medicine show, according to a commercial news clip from 1985. Then, as now, the members were involved in community improvements and even sponsored a Christmas lighting decoration contest until 1973, when it was canceled due to the energy crisis. The members ring bells for the Salvation Army, participate in Adopt a Highway, work for Habitat for Humanity, and numerous other organizations. Changes over the years. The Danville Club came into existence on October the 20th, 1959, under sponsorship of the Catlin Lions Club. Membership at the time was 19 and has gone up to 40 to 50 members, said Falstich. There are now 27 members, many of whom have been with the club for years. The club opened its membership to women in 1987, and there is one female member now. An effort to start a Lioness Club failed earlier when there wasn't enough interest. Attorney Michael O'Brien, a member since 1985, explained why he stayed on. I enjoy the fellowship. I enjoy helping the community. Also, he said, there are a lot of interesting speakers who address local issues and educate the club about their programs. Other members also remarked on the fellowship and the educational programs, but they also stressed the importance of lending a hand. Keith Strinmone, a 17-year member, said, there's a purpose to what we do. If you have that sense of values, It's important to stay with the club. Sten Mohn is a chairman of the Eye Care Committee. As for the future, the Lions Club expects to continue its community work. However, Falstead said, people don't have the same commitment to joining organizations as they did in the past, and it's more challenging to recruit members. Each of us has had to get out there. We need to put more attention into it, he said. Dr. Brad Cooper, president of the local group, said there's an open invitation for people to join. Falstead said, we've always welcomed men and women to be a part of our good organization. Founded in 1917, Lions Club International is the world's largest service club organization, with 1.35 million members in more than 46,000 clubs. After Helen Keller spoke to the national group in 1925, the club accepted her challenge to become Knights of the Blind in the crusade against darkness. Lions Club International will have its 100th International Convention, June 30th to July 4th, in Chicago. FYI, anyone interested in joining the Danville Lions Club may call Fred Falstead at 260-4994. That's 260-4994. The club meets at noon each Thursday at Spanky's Banquet Center, located at 409 East Main Street. The location may change for special events. Learn more at lionsclubs.org or facebook.com/danvillelionsclub.com. The city hopes to educate the public on historic preservation. Not a lot of people may know what the city's Historic Preservation Commission is or does. Danville senior planner Tyson Terhune hopes to change that. Terhune has been trying to find new board members and update the commission's bylaws. According to the city, Danville has its own historic preservation ordinance and is recognized as a certified local government by the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency. This status, conferred to local governments through states and recognized by the National Trust for Historic Preservation, makes preservation information and resources available to the city. A 7-member commission of local volunteers appointed by the mayor meets at 5 p.m. the second Thursday of each month at the Robert E. Jones Municipal Building, located at 17 West Main Street, to address preservation concerns. Terhune, who has been with the city since last fall, said the big thing he wanted to do and roll out this year is more of a focus on the public educational goal of the commission, more so than the landmark preservation. He said landmark preservation won't be ignored, but he'd like to see the commission have a more visible presence at community events to educate the public, such as having a booth at an event or a float in a parade. He said he wants to focus on who the Historic Preservation Commission is and how it can help people who are interested in these things. The commission can educate the public on historically significant sites. Terhune said it's really about putting information out there to people and slowly increasing the knowledge. He said the commission may look at a web page and apps and having a more digital presence and have more collaboration with other historic agencies in the community. City Council members will act on new board member appointments at Carolyn Wands and Roberta Allen. The commission consists of Chairperson Becky Woodrum, Vice Chairperson Marilyn Blanton, and Commissioners Erica Carroll and Nora Price. There remains another vacancy. Terhune is a city employee liaison for the commission to help facilitate it. He said he's been reading minutes and ordinances to get up to date on the commission. During the past years, in Terhune's opinion, the commission has largely only reviewed and acted upon certificates or appropriateness for changes to structures in the Lincoln Park Historic District. There have been few historic landmark nominations to review and act upon. Terhune said the commission is more behind the scenes, and the fewer activities that happen, the less the public knows about them. Terhune said he's been discussing with the commission board possible bylaw changes to make it easier to get new members on the commission and who can nominate structures for historic designation. Bylaws now state people appointed to the commission must come from certain vocations, such as real estate, or be involved in architecture. Terhune said that makes it harder to find people to serve on the commission. He's proposing changing the bylaws to allow members who have a historic structure background, such as people with others, or people at the library, or preserving old homes, or just an interest in historic preservation, to be allowed to serve. He said he'd like to see anyone on the board who is excited about historic preservation. The board also has discussed updating a 1993 reconnaissance survey. Terhune has written a grant, which the 1993 survey came about from a grant through the University of Illinois. The survey identified types of historic homes in certain areas of the city and areas for the commission to explore and research more about what was there and what the city should possibly preserve. An updated survey would allow the commission to complete a database of historic homes in Danville and connect them to historic resources. The commission can examine what's existing in the city instead of waiting for people to come to them. Terhune added, saying that a five-commissioner or a commissioner under the current bylaws cannot nominate a site for preservation. The commission has to wait for someone else to do so. There are about 22 local and national historic landmarks designated in the city. They include buildings at Danville Area Community College, the new Holland Apartments, Harrison Park Clubhouse, Fisher Park Clubhouse, Fisher Theater, Vermilion County Museum, Vermilion County War Museum, and the Stone Arch Bridge. Historic landmark designs offer recognition and limit modifications to the structure or item. The federal building along Vermilion Street, nominated by a different group, has been going through the process of being on the National Register, according to Terhune. Officials have identified the woman found in a submerged vehicle. Officials have identified the body recovered Saturday from a submerged car in Lake Vermilion. Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden said in a press release Monday that 19-year-old Labricia L. Lilliard of Danville was pulled from the submerged vehicle. She added an autopsy is scheduled for Tuesday. Vermilion County Sheriff's deputies were called to the scene early Saturday morning as emergency personnel observed items indicating a car was likely underwater near the boat ramp. Their underwater search and rescue team responded and located a vehicle, and a deceased person was found inside. Sheriff's Captain Michael Hartsham said Saturday there were no apparent signs of foul play at that time. No further information was available Monday. The Vermilion County Coroner's Office and the Sheriff's Department continue their investigation into the incident. And in other county news, the county sees an 8 fatal overdoses since December. Since being sworn into office in December, Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden reports she has handled 8 confirmed fatal drug overdoses, which includes 2 caused by polysubstance toxicity, and another possible case is pending. Of those 2 polysubstance cases, one was a combination of heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine. The other showed presence of heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, fentanyl, and oxycodone. A lot of these overdoses happen at their homes, McFadden said. The majority happened at their own residence or a friend's house. McFadden added, not all of those cases involved young people. We had one that was 25 and one that was 69, she said. It's from 25 to 70 years old. She also believes each one of those fatal overdoses was accidental and said, we need to get the word out about Narcotics Anonymous and having a place to go. McFadden also said those involved in the overdose cases were not new to possible drug abuse. These are people who have a problem. Their families know. But why are they slipping through the cracks? She asks. McFadden supposed that people don't understand what exact types of substances they're putting into their bodies. You don't know the purity level of the drug you put into your body, she said. It could be something you're not used to, and that makes it more lethal. They show up in the emergency room with no trauma to their body, she said. At that point, we don't know why. Are they refusing help? Number one for methamphetamine. According to Master Sergeant Lisa Mitchell, spokeswoman for the Vermilia Metropolitan Enforcement Group, in 2016, the county had the highest number of methamphetamine lab seizures in the state for the fourth year in a row. A total of 91 labs were shut down last year. Also in 2016, Mitchell said the agency reported 241 investigations and made 279 arrests. More than 5,000 grams of methamphetamine were seized, which includes over 3,000 grams of crystal ice. That's up from only 91 grams of crystal ice seized in 2015. She said crystals ice meth can definitely increase a person's heart rate. All of these things which are being reported into the county from large cities such as Chicago and Indianapolis, according to Mitchell, methamphetamine also is coming in from the Missouri area, especially with crystal meth. She said more people are using the crystal form because it's easily accessible and they don't have to make it themselves or get caught in the act of manufacturing it. Aside from that, she insisted a large amount of methamphetamine still is being made locally, at just over 2,100 grams. Heroin seizures last year dropped slightly to 66 grams, down from about 103 in 2015. About 275 grams of cocaine were seized, along with 1,800 grams of cannabis. The local Narcotics Anonymous meeting schedule, Illinois VA Health Center, 1900 East Main Street, 7:30 p.m. Tuesdays, 6:30 p.m. Sundays. Prairie Center, 1222 East Ruhi Street, noon Mondays and Tuesdays, 5:45 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 6 p.m. Wednesdays, 10:30 a.m. Fridays. New Directions, 153 North Vermilion Street, 9 a.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 6 p.m. Fridays. Community Church of God, 535 South Bowman Avenue, at 7:30 p.m. on Mondays. Family Life Skills Building, 1101 West Palm, 1101 East Winter Avenue, and at 7 p.m. on Saturdays. A new health network works to fill in the gaps. A new group, the Community Health Network, is working to identify the top two actions that need to be addressed in Vermilion County. The group will be meeting to discuss creating a real-time community-wide database that every organization, church, and ministry will have access to, mapping the assets in the community to see if there are enough services to meet needs in certain neighborhoods. Those goals were identified at a recent meeting attended by 65 people represented churches, agencies, and social service organizations. In October, a workshop called A Better Way attracted about 55 people to address the questions. Is there a better way to help people in our communities who are living at or below the poverty level? Are we treating them with value and dignity, or just perpetuating a problem? The recent follow-up meeting asks, what does a healthy community look like? What are the hopes and dreams for the community? Community Health Network looks at the community as a whole and identifies the needs and works to fill the gaps. Ashton Greer, a senior program coordinator, said, with Faith in Action in Danville, the goal is to better align the resources and work together with all agencies. The group does not want to duplicate efforts of the Vermilion County Health Department, which has developed work groups for substance abuse, obesity, teen pregnancy, and mental health. Thus, different action items were chosen, and committees will be appointed to study these. In one goal, the group would create a real-time community-wide database that every organization, church, and ministry would have access to. The general public, however, will not be able to access the database. All efforts will be made to ensure HIPAA compliance and confidentiality. This will open the pathways of communication among agencies, eliminate duplication of services, and also identify the repeated request within the community. For example, if a person visits a certain ministry for money one day and then visits a different ministry for money the next day, that will have been recorded in the database that participating groups will have access to. If the organizations and agencies are consistent in using and updating their services to individuals, it is possible to have a reliable record of who is receiving such services within our community and how frequently. The hope is to help individuals thrive, not just survive. The second goal of the thoroughly asset mapping of the community ties in with the community-wide database. As the assets are mapped, each identified organization can gain access to the database, making it more accurate and effective. This could also be used to identify which needs are most prevalent in specific neighborhoods and assess if there are sufficient services in those neighborhoods to address the need. By asset mapping, we will know that Vermilion County is lacking, and what we have may be too much of. So we can begin to build upon that already, which we have established, filling gaps as they are identified, said Greer. As the Community Health Network meetings continue, the goals of the group will evolve and grow, said Greer. In an effort to give people a hand up, not a hand out, Faith in Action, in partnership with the Chalmers Foundation, will offer a faith and finances class. Presenters will get training in late spring in Bloomington. Nathan Lindstra, associate pastor with Connection Church, will help teach the classes, which will address topics such as job preparation and understanding money management. All classes will be based on the Bible and God's perspective on money. Local churches will refer people, and the program will be geared toward low income. With a better understanding of finances, Lindstra said, people can set on a better trajectory for life. The goal is to eliminate chronic needs by teaching people how to help themselves and to give them the tools they need to do so. And now a couple of the obituaries for the area. Rita Lambert. Rita Roberta Lambert, 95, of Georgetown, died at 1:11 a.m. Saturday, February 18, 2017, at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements will be at 10 a.m. Thursday at Sunset's Holton Leisure Funeral Home at 200 East West Street in Georgetown, with Paul Miller officiating. Burial will be in Georgetown Cemetery in Georgetown. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Bernica Thompson. Bernica D. Thompson, 89, of Georgetown, died at 5:05 p.m. Wednesday, February 15, 2017, at North Logan Healthcare Center. Funeral services will be at noon Thursday at Carter Metropolitan CME Church, located at 448 East William Street in Danville, with the Reverend Stephen Perkins officiating. Burial will be in Spring Hill Cemetery, located in Danville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to noon on Thursday at the church. There will also be a visitation from 1 to 5 p.m. Wednesday at Leek & Sons Funeral Home at 404 East Williams Street. I'm sorry, 304 East Williams Street in Danville. And that's all for the obituaries for today. And finally, this short story of correctional officer jobs are available. The Vermilion County Sheriff's Department is taking applications for several correctional officer openings at the county jail. Applications can be picked up now through Wednesday at the information window at the Public Safety Building. The completed applications must be returned to the Sheriff's Department by Thursday. Applicants must be at least 20 years old, a high school graduate, or have a GED, be able to pass a background investigation, and have no felony or serious misdemeanors convictions. The written exam and physical agility testing of applicants will be at 1 p.m. on March 5th at the Fieldhouse at Danville High School. If applicants pass both tests, they advance to oral interviews with the Merit Commission. And with that, I really want to thank you for joining me once again right here on the Illinois Radio Reader. Again, my name is Cedric Richardson, and it is truly a pleasure to read with you. Until next time, I bid you farewell.